People Leading People is a podcast about the stuff that pops up when you lead people at work. Join Brennan McEachran, CEO of Soapbox, and me, Jillian Bora, customer experience at Soapbox, as we interview the people leaders that inspire us most.
Okay, cool guys. Welcome to the last episode of season one of People Leading People. Today, Brennan and I just want to kind of talk about, we just want to have a chat about the things we've learned this season. Hopefully our learnings are helpful for you guys. We're just going to kind of talk through the different episodes and the things we liked from each of them.
And I would love to invite you to do the same, reach out to us, and share what you've learned or like what you've applied. And I think that's what I'll try to do is like, what have I applied, to Soapbox based on these conversations?
Yeah. Also, ooh, cool new idea too. If you wanted to leave a comment with your favorite episode, even if you just say like the name of the person who was in the episode, so that we can be directing people kind of to like the best, the top episodes of the season. That'd be great.
Love it.
Love it. Okay, cool. Well, we interviewed a lot of great leaders this season. And I think we learned a ton from all of them, but let's talk about, Paul Tashima. So we interviewed Paul a little while ago.
Yeah.
And one of the things we talked about with him was as a CEO, what he thinks about a lot is how does he get his leadership team to get the people that they're leading to ask them the questions they are asking him. So it's kind of like they come to him with questions about sort of the business and contextual things. And he always says, well, you need to get your team to ask you those questions.
That's the one that stuck out for me too. And the other thing is like just reflecting back on it, Paul's a great storyteller, right? Like the stuff that sticks out is these personal experiences he was able to share with us. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that stuck out for me too, is him saying in his one-on-one, and he says, you know, over and over again, you know, you've got to get your team members, you've got to get your employees to ask you the same questions you're asking me. And when you think of it that way, and you think of, you know, all of the work that would take in order to get, you know, your individual team members to be at the same state, you know, mm-hmm. your brain is at currently, to ask all of these different questions to your boss, then that's really kind of scaling yourself or scaling leadership or scaling the context and spreading the information you need to spread. And I think the reason why that resonated with me so much is like, that's such a daunting ask mm-hmm. of somebody in such a really simple way to say, you know, what do I have to do in order to get my team to be at the same place I'm at in terms of information and understanding?
Yeah.
And I love that. That's the one I use now all the time. I not only internally, but also when I'm out talking with managers, mm-hmm. you know, when talking about one-on-ones, talking about, you know, what do you want to get at? Mm-hmm. How do you want to scale it? You really want to get them, I think, up to the same level you're at in terms of context understanding. That's the goal.
Totally. And it is, like you said, it is daunting. And I think one of the things that passed through my mind when I was thinking about that was, you know, but don't you want the people on your team as a leader to be really focused on the things that they need to accomplish? And how do you balance kind of like making sure that they keep their head in the game with what they're meant to be focusing on versus, you know, understanding the greater context and, you know, all these kinds of things. And I think when we were chatting with Alyssa Furtado,
yeah.
she had a really great tool. She talked about a really great tool called Rock Setting that yeah. I think really brought that home, at least for me, when she started, you know, how maybe you can talk a little bit
yeah,
about it,
but I think that was Alyssa was great. So we actually follow, and if you actually listen to the book, she said she brought in a facilitator. You don't really have to do that in order to start taking some of these learnings. There's great books out there that basically talk about the same thing. Traction is one that she used, we use. Scaling Up is another one that's kind of like the Rockefeller Habits 2.0. Mm-hmm. Really, I think it's I think it is complicated, but I think step one is like recognize that that's now your job as a manager, right? And then step two
is to bring that context.
Is to bring that context yeah. and to break some of these problems down into mm-hmm. understandable chunks that can be spread. Mm-hmm. And I think the EOS system or like these different systems are a really smart, helpful way to think about it. And when you think about like, okay, what am I going to talk about the one-on-one? What am I going to talk about at the team meeting? How am I going to do these quarterly plans? And I think as first-time managers, you look at all of these discrete events and you're like, wow, this is a lot of time in meetings.
And it's a lot of work. Like it's kind of like, oh, do I have to start from scratch each time. Start thinking about all these different things?
And what do I do here? And what do I do there? And the helpful thing for me that those tools provided is just a way of thinking about that as a system, right? So, you know, your vision and, you know, mission statement is helpful because it's something far away that's really ambiguous, but it helps you set okay, well, what does that look like in 10 years? What does that look like in 5 years or 3 years? Mm-hmm. And those three-year plans help you break down to, okay, what's my quarterly goals? What are the mm-hmm. big things I want to accomplish this year? How do I break that down into four discrete chunks, right? And call those rocks, call those OKRs. We call them OKRs, even mm-hmm. though, you know, we basically follow traction. Call them whatever you want to call them. Those are the four things or the four immovable goals that you're going to try to accomplish this quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then your weekly meeting, if it's a level 10 meeting or however you want to think about it, is really just 12 opportunities to check in on the progress of those goals.
Mm-hmm.
And so would you rather check in on the progress of those immovable, very important goals once a month? So you get three opportunities to see if you're going to hit them, or do you want to do it 12 times, right? Or if you're going to do it bi-weekly, do you want to do it six, right?
Mm-hmm.
For us, or the way I think about it is like, well, that's just 12 opportunities to reset course and fix problems before they become problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love those books. I think she did a great job of describing how it works within her organization.
Yeah, great job.
For thinking about, okay, how do I break up these really important, dense goals and objectives and things into discrete events that all, I think, connect and ladder up and kind of share knowledge,
mm-hmm.
But really, I think, create this feeling of momentum and progress towards them, which
mm-hmm.
is really, really important for a team, right? Just
yeah.
to feel engaged.
Exactly. It's kind of, how do you project manage your business strategy?
Yep.
How do you take this big thing that you've got, this huge project you have to do, it's a huge goal,
yep.
how do you break it down into individual tasks that you can check on regularly?
Yep.
And that's really what it is. So if you're looking for a way to scale your strategy or learn more about different systems like EOS, the Alyssa episode is great. You should go back in the feed and have a quick listen.
Exactly. And I think that the other things, you know, sometimes when we talk about these things, we talk about them company-wide just because of who we're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean they have to be company-wide, right? Like, you can do this within your team. You can do this within any, you know, project or any goal that's longer term.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of the things that are, say you have a shorter term project, some of the shorter term things they do, like the weekly meetings, you can model that. Off of the same thing. And,
totally.
And I think get very similar benefits.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another thing that we talked about in that episode is that systems like this help kind of relationships between teams and help people understand the way their work impacts everybody else's work and how everything is connected as a system also within the organization, which makes me think of the conversation we were having with Derek.
Yeah.
All about kind of win-wins and bureaucracy hacks and how, you know, shifting your mindset from just being an individual contributor in your box, I need to complete these tasks, and kind of taking that step out and saying, well, how do my tasks impact the success of everyone around us?
No, it's a great point. Like, it's almost like it's a different look at the same system, right? Like, a top-down
mm-hmm.
look is like, oh, we have these EOS systems, we have these, you know, we follow these methodologies.
How do we get something from the top to everybody?
And then
yeah.
Derek was great at like, hey, here's how I kind of discovered that in reverse, right? Like,
yeah.
I got my head out of my task list and started looking at, okay, I'm actually a part of this system, but instead of code, it's now people.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the hacks that I have at my disposal in order to get work done faster, but more with like
mm-hmm.
management hacks versus just typing code faster.
Yeah.
And I've used a few of them, and I've shared a few of those that I think are super valuable. And the one that sticks out other than food, which is, I think, really important.
Yeah, Derek talked a lot about how important food is. So if you're into food in meetings,
yeah,
you got to
do it. But the one I think is really valuable for new managers is just thinking about win-wins, right? So you're thinking about your goal. Someone's given you this goal, right? You've got to lead a team to achieve this goal. Sometimes there's like frustrating things that appear, like, oh, I can't do this because this person's doing that,
mm-hmm.
or I really want to do this, but these people are telling me, and all these priorities are shifting. To think about like, okay, how do I create a series of win-wins throughout the organization? And I remember I was chatting with a lady here in Toronto, and her task was like making user onboarding better. And she was having a hard time because success wanted something, sales wanted something else, and the founders wanted something else, and she was pulled in all these different
happens
directions.
Happens all the time.
All the time.
All the time.
And the CEO comes in and squashes things.
Where'd you come from?
Where'd I, yeah.
Get the hell out of here.
But what was neat with her and chatting with her is just thinking about it with win-wins was, okay, it's not just her little micro world of each individual user. How do I onboard each individual user? It was thinking about onboarding, you know, breaking those users up into different segments,
mm-hmm.
and then creating win-wins. So how does she create a win-win with her team and the sales team and the CS team.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talked about it that way, I think it became really clear for her, oh, user onboarding includes those sales sandboxes or those sales trials, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I can set up a trial to be super successful without the salesperson doing anything,
mm-hmm.
the sales team is going to love it. That's
mm-hmm.
going to help us make more money. And the CS team, as long as it's set up properly, is going to love it as well, because that whole customer is going to come to them basically set up, you know, 95% properly.
Yeah.
And that was like a great thing for her to go off and tackle right off the bat to
yeah.
for sure create onboarding better, but create a bunch of win-wins in the process.
And the great thing about something like that too, that specific example, is that it gives people from these three teams that perhaps are working in silos a chance to come together and work on something together and really put the customer first.
Yep.
And I think it highlights the fact that a customer's experience, I think when we work for companies that build apps, it's very easy to get lost in a customer's experience is their experience in the app.
Yeah.
But really, for a lot of at least B2B software,
yeah.
there's a ton of stuff that goes on outside of the app that lends to the customer experience, and at the end of the day, lends to whether or not they're going to be renewing.
Yeah.
And I think when you can find projects and moments like that to bring all of those teams together, the ones who are, you know, directly high touch talking to customers and the ones who are the more low touch experience, when you can find ways to meld those together, I think that's when you really are putting the customer first, because you're trying to think end to end, what are all the touch points this person
yeah.
or these people have with our organization?
And I think Derek, to me anyways, like put it in a really good way in my brain, which was connecting these people in meetings. Like at first you're like, oh, more meetings, great. But the way he was thinking about them as, sure, meetings, but meetings are hacks, right? Like that's
mm-hmm.
like a way you can connect these two people who otherwise aren't connecting, bring them together and get your work done faster.
Yeah.
If you didn't do that, it would take 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can kind of sneak away to hack, you know, a room full of the right people,
yeah.
get them up talking about the right thing and get agreement really quickly, by the end of that meeting, like, wow, you can save yourself tons of time.
Totally, totally. Yeah, and it was kind of cool to hear, like you were saying, his stories about, you know, starting as an individual contributor and working his way up to management. And lucky for him, he loves being a manager, and it really
mm-hmm.
was kind of where he shines. But for a lot of people, you know, the move from individual contributor into manager is a
yeah.
really, really stressful time. And
yeah.
it's something that not everybody takes
mm-hmm.
very well, because it's you know, you're a great coder doesn't mean you're a great psychiatrist or
yeah.
a great coach
yeah.
or a great whatever,
yeah.
right? Which is what you're being asked to do when you become a manager.
Yeah.
And I think Mike Katchen
yeah.
From Wealth Simple had a
yeah.
lot of really cool things to say. And I was really intrigued by the way, sort of the philosophy around job mapping at his company and
yep.
how, you know, he lets people continue to be individual contributors if they're crushing it and that's what they're kind of meant to do, versus forcing everyone down this management path.
Yeah. And exactly. And I think, you know, every time I think back to Mike, it's like Mike is like the most thoughtful person.
Yeah.
Right. And so when he thinks about, I think career progression, he's really thinking about it, being as thoughtful as he can to each individual employee.
Mm-hmm.
And that just shows through in like the company he's created and the systems that kind of exist there, right? Where, you know, what's best for the person and what's best for, you know, Bob in engineering might not be this fast paced, you know, charismatic, extroverted management path.
Yeah.
It might be, let's, you know, give him the responsibility and give him the authority and give him the pay raise and all of these things that normally come with management, but put it to the skills that he or she wants to develop.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that we, I think, necessarily can implement today here, but
yeah.
it is something that we've talked about, like, okay, when the time's right, that's exactly how we're going to do it. And there's a few books, too, that talk about it deeper, like Radical Candor actually does
mm-hmm.
talk about rock stars and superstars.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are thinking about, okay, how do I set some of these things up?
Mm-hmm.
You can do it within your team too. Like it doesn't have to be this company-wide effort.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, you know, when you're thinking about coaching employees, you're thinking about, you know, who do you give projects to or who do you give a little bit more autonomy to? Think about it in, you know, what's going to be best suited for their skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Or like I put on like my mic hat and just be like incredibly thoughtful on the person. And if they're great at management, awesome. Like,
mm-hmm.
let's let them flex that muscle.
Yeah.
But if they're really great at their core skill set, let's let them flex that muscle
mm-hmm.
And not necessarily force them into this muscle they don't want to be in.
Totally. And it is so interesting, too, when you start thinking about, I mean, obviously we're always thinking about, you know, strengths and weaknesses and where do you fall on this spectrum and that spectrum and the other spectrum. And when we were speaking with the Nightingales, Melissa and Jonathan, we talked about the relationship results spectrum, which I thought was so interesting. And still I'm trying to say, I mean, I think I just fall in the middle. I'm usually like a very gray area kind of person. Yeah. But it's an interesting way to think about a person, you know, whether they're on your team or they're your manager or whatever. And it's a kind of a new avenue if you're looking for ways to coach. And like coaching to me is a very daunting thing, and understanding like, how do I even dissect what to coach in someone? And to me that sort of shifted my perspective a little bit and gave me another thing that, oh, you could coach on relationship versus results. So I thought that was an interesting
one. I think it's also like, for me, it was really neat to go like, oh shit, like where do I sit and how do I get better? Right.
Yeah.
And,
what are things I can do?
And I know, okay, I'm probably more, you know, leaning towards this side. So that means I have to work a little bit harder to, you know, unnaturally go a little bit farther over here, but probably that's where I should be.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing, like right off the bat, I remember like a week after that episode, I had a reference call. And I think the interesting things with reference calls are, I think reference calls are important. Like you should do them.
Yeah.
If you're hiring people and you're not doing reference calls, not only like shame on you, but like, man, you're missing out on so much key information. Even if you're like already set, I'm going to hire this person. Think about like, hey, interviewing that person's previous managers and how to manage them better. At least do that.
Yeah. At least so you can have a leg up when they start working with
exactly.
you kind of already know.
And you immediately get them into a productive state.
But you wouldn't want it to cloud your vision. Like, so sidetrack, but you wouldn't want them to be like, oh, now I'm going to paint you with this brush.
Of course.
Of course. Just putting that
in. But what I think is hard about reference checks, and we definitely should do an episode on it because there are some hacks within reference checks to make them useful and not just stupid, is the hard thing is everyone there is trying to sell the candidate, right? Like they have this personal relationship with the candidate. They want them to do, you know, good. They want them to get the job.
Mm-hmm.
So they're there purposely to like not say bad things.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get them to say potentially bad things, that you want them to raise the red flag and be like, you know, don't hire this person. And I thought what was really interesting was talking about the, you know, relationship to result spectrum, not saying either one is bad, but, you know, I loved how Jonathan and Melissa kind of labeled the farthest of the relationship side of the spectrum being, oh, you're basically just a big teddy bear.
Mm-hmm. I think they said huggy bears.
Huggy bear,
yeah,
that's right.
Which
you're
I think
big,
is adorable.
Huggy
bear. You're a big huggy bear.
And the result side of things is basically you're just a big asshole.
Yeah, just a mean person.
And you're just mean, right?
Yeah.
And you care, you'll kind of burn the relationship bridge in order to focus more on the result. Obviously, that's not great. Same with the huggy bear. Like, you'll kind of ignore the results in order to have huggy bear feelings. Obviously,
yeah, which doesn't help
great.
The business, right?
And it doesn't help the business at all. And so in you know the reference call that happened just after that, I kind of got the sense that this person was like kind of a you know, could get themselves in situations where they were mean and the team just didn't like them.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to get a sense of like,
please don't
hire
that person.
Yeah. Am I being crazy? Am I being insane? Am I thinking this? Like, am I reading between the lines correctly? And so it got to the point where I was like, okay, you know, I had this great conversation, and you know they said people kind of fall in this relationship to results spectrum. Results is all about caring about results and not necessarily caring too much about, you know, the interpersonal relationships that happen around that. Where would you say this candidate falls? And they said like as far on relationship or sorry, as far on results as possible, right? Like this person is 100% results. And so I was like, okay, confirm the person's an asshole. And,
yeah.
That might not entirely be fair, but it kind of confirmed some of the twinges I got.
Yeah, you had other things in the conversation that sort of were red flags.
Yeah,
and,
I was
another,
like
okay.
is this it? And turns out to be it. And they would have worked with Jill, and that would have been awful.
That
would have
been. I don't really like mean people.
So,
very
but
much.
The thing for me was that doesn't necessarily mean don't hire results oriented people or 100% results oriented people. It came down to, okay, do we have the energy as managers to coach that person from being 100% result to being something, you know, more balanced. And I think in the state that we were in for this particular role, I didn't feel comfortable that we had enough energy to devote to managing
it's
that.
It's just not the time for our company.
Exactly.
We don't have time for that. And I think it's interesting too, because if you think about it from, you know, what's the team you're trying to build? And there will be cases, I'm sure, where, you know, you need to balance out your team with someone who is very results oriented. Yep. And in that case, that would be the right choice for the team. But like you said before, they'd be working with me and with other people like me, where it's kind of like, we don't, that's not the vibe that we need. And that's not the vibe that's going to make that role successful.
Yeah.
It's like, that just isn't what is needed in that role.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had a lot of great conversations this season. I feel like there's tons of stuff to learn. So if you haven't yet, if you haven't had a chance to listen to the other episodes in the season, go back, you know, subscribe to the podcast or download the different episodes, the ones that you're most interested in. And we're also starting to think about season two. So if anyone out there has, you know, topics you'd like us to cover next season, if you know of leaders that you'd really like to hear from, there's some information in the episode notes of this episode of how to contact us. To let us know about that. And you can also let us know in a review. So if you want to leave a review, you know, 5 stars is always welcomed. But, you know, be truthful, be honest. And
I think I'll jump in on that point. I think, you know, like most companies out there kind of experimenting and trying new things, this podcast is an experiment for us.
Yeah.
And we've heard from a lot of people, especially as we've been doing this, that, hey, podcasts can kind of really catch on. No idea if ours will. We're really treating, I think, season one as an experiment.
Yeah.
And I think reviews are going to be the way that we judge it. So if you do like it, you do want other people to listen to it, you did get value out of it, please do. And I know, like, I'm a person who listens to podcasts and hear the plea for review all the time.
All the time. And sometimes they're
very
funny.
Very rarely do
cute.
It, but.
Yeah, I've done it. I do it for the ones that I love.
Yeah.
I do it for the ones
please
that I love.
Please do review this one. And 5 stars, great. Give us your honest review, because we might end up doing a season two. And
helps us prioritize our work, quite frankly. Yeah.
Let's make it better.
Great. Well, thanks for tuning in, guys, and hope to hear from you in the reviews forum. Cheers.
Thanks.
People Leading People is produced by Soapbox, an app that helps managers and employees work better together by giving them a place to manage their one-on-ones, team meetings, and company-wide discussions. Download it for free at soapboxhq.com/free. Special thanks to our editor, Joel North. If you liked what you heard today, do us a favor and give us 5 stars in the reviews. And if you're really feeling the love, leave a comment with a secret question you'd like us to ask in an upcoming episode.